welcome. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. Tonight, I thought we would have a show dealing with what this program is so much about, but not completely. And I thought we'd deal with spiritual principles and the science of metaphysics. And the reason for that is because that's supposedly, in part, what we're trying to cover. So many people get it confused with it being some kind of mediumship stuff or something like that, which has nothing to do with that. But that's part of the reason I thought we should talk about it. So I thought I should have some input into the question of what do I mean by spiritual, what do I mean by science, and what do I mean by metaphysics, because some people think metaphysics is people who sit around and basically look in crystal balls or something like that. And definitely not metaphysics. Metaphysics has been around for a very long time. It actually predates physics. And some very famous physicists were first metaphysicians before they were physicists. And in some cases, before they were necessarily, in our terminology by today's standards, even scientists. Isaac Newton, a very, very early physicist who basically constructed the beginning of physics as a single act of greatness, and who invented two forms of calculus. He further described and figured out how the planets are supposedly going to move around our solar system, through an understanding of the basics of what he considered to be the mathematics of gravity. And he studied motion and optics and light and on, all the things that most people today would consider to be basic physics, he basically invented. And so, but before he did that, he was a metaphysician and even in part an alchemist. Alchemists were people who applied the principles of metaphysics to theories of physical change or physics itself in various materials, mostly back in those days, to produce gold or some other important issue. But the most important thing that they were really trying to recreate was a thing called the Philosopher's Stone. And that's a pretty hard thing to understand. Now, that makes him definitely a metaphysician, because he wasn't just trying to create a physical reality. Gold would be a physical reality. But because he wanted to create the Philosopher's Stone, the Philosopher's Stone changed the consciousness and the ability to affect energy through consciousness by the person who understood how to create and hold, and I'm using this word in a liberal sense, the Philosopher's Stone. And you could say, what is that about? That sounds weird. And that's what Isaac Newton was into? Yeah, that's what he was really into. Long before, about 10 to 15 years before, he even started on some of his more basic theories of physics, he actually was into that. And long before he wrote Mathematica Copernica and a lot of other important source books that are still read. Now, okay, so what is there about metaphysics that is different from physics? And it has to do with things like philosopher's stones and other stuff like that. Metaphysics takes physics and brings it beyond the physical sciences, beyond the physics of the physical world. That's the best way to describe that. And so it expands, it goes beyond the proven and known understandings of the physical universe because it makes an assumption that there is such a thing. And so people who are looking at into metaphysics usually have theories or understandings of multidimensional space, multidimensional time as well, and there has been a lot of work done in multidimensional time and space since about 1900. The first person to do this was a fellow named Max Planck. and a German scientist. And he discovered that matter was indefinite in time and or space. And if matter is indefinite, then he assumed, correctly, that the standard model at that time for physics, proposed by Newton and then his later followers, were somewhat wrong. And he actually computed the amount that of the indefiniteness of matter and came up with a constant number for the realm that we live in, which some people think of as just the physical world, but it really has to do with the physical and electromagnetic parts of it together. And he did this in 1900, and he got it exactly right, right out of the box. Just unbelievable, came up with this number, which is extremely, extremely small. And what he discovered is that matter is indefinite because of a relationship between it and the consciousness of anything else around it. And that's a very, like, a strange concept, because most people don't know that. They think that it's that's some kind of funny thing that came out of the spiritual people over in the 19th century or something, you know, before Max Planck. But he was a brilliant guy who at first had a lot of trouble with the idea even of what he was working on. But nonetheless, he was a real scientist in the sense that he was willing to try to find the truth. In his search for the truth, he came up with certain, we'll say, issues that became the beginning of quantum physics. And some of those issues was that the ability to understand our universe is based upon factors of probability. And the underlying issue of probability, when he researched what that meant in terms of physical reality, was that it meant that everything in the universe had some level of free choice. And he was kind of shocked by that conclusion himself. And then others later, about a couple decades later, a guy named Heisenberg and some other people, they did some experiments to see whether or not Max was right. Because they figured, they knew the mathematics worked. They knew that the quantum constant, which had been established, you know, in 1900, was really, truly a real number, and that things were indefinite in time and space, and their indefiniteness seemed to be constructed by the capriciousness of things like photons and electrons. You can imagine that. They were kind of like doing their own thing when it didn't make any sense that electrons had any consciousness or photons or anything else in the universe. And it seemed like their consciousness could be affected by even greater consciousness around them. And this was a strange kind of system. Eventually, they drew it to the concept that the choices that the electrons and photons and other kinds of matter were making were connected to the consciousness in some way of either the electrons or photons and other things, subatomic particles, whatever, or they were connected to a stronger consciousness coming from some other living being. And that, therefore, energy follows thought greater than its own. Now, that's a strange statement in itself. Many people think it was shortened, unfortunately, to energy follows thought. Well, energy doesn't follow thought that's not greater than its own, but greater than its own energy thought is definitely has some effect on energy. And they did some experiments that were thought experiments with a cat. Is a cat dead or alive? It depends what you think. And then it depends who's observing the cat. And anytime you observe something, you have an effect on it because the act of observation changes the probability that whatever you're observing will not be affected by the energy you use to observe it with. All these things became so finely interconnected, eventually by the 1930s, that it became an accepted rule rather than some kind of, we'll say, theory. Because over and over again, it became proven that these quantum theories of energy and, we'll call it, metaphysics were really part of physics. And there was sort of a crossover at that point, and people were no longer being accused of being metaphysicians, but being physics, let's say, technicians or physicists, physical scientists, or eventually quantum physical theorists. And so it was a gradual change. It wasn't like just overnight suddenly this new idea took over physics, but it eventually did. And even today, I would say two-thirds of all the physicists I talk to do not know what I just said in the first 11 minutes of this broadcast. And that's kind of strange, because this is the basis of the new physics called quantum physics. And they're more concerned about something called quantum mechanics rather than quantum physics. Quantum mechanics is part of quantum physics. All quantum mechanics does is explain the likely reactions of small things like subatomic particles, electrons, photons, and atoms, and how they're going to interact with a bigger, wider universe in a more Einsteinian relativistic form of physics. So that's what they're about. And this quantum mechanical stuff is literally mechanical. It isn't so theoretical and philosophical as what I said a couple minutes ago. The unfortunate problem with this is that the mechanical issues of quantum physics are used in very, very small ways that have an effect on extremely limited systems for the purposes of developing the newest forms of electronics and beyond. However, it's almost like you're completely throwing out everything that is really important about quantum physics when you become so involved with the mechanics and you start applying it to systems such as down to absolute zero temperatures and other systems that are in severely high distortion fields of magnetism and other things. This is the way it has gone in application of metaphysics, so that basically what used to be metaphysical is now applied quantum mechanics and has virtually no relationship to its beginnings, and to the point where about two-thirds of the people who think that way don't even recognize what the metaphysical properties are of the physics that they're using. I know that sounds strange, but it's true. If you talk to them, and if you look it up, you'll find out that it's very real. All right, so how is this all coming together then? You've got spiritual principles that appear to be very important. The single most is what I said a few minutes ago. Energy follows thought greater than its own. I had an email from a fellow, and I got to send him some pages from a textbook I wrote by email. I haven't had a chance, but I will. He's probably listening this evening. At any rate, he had something mixed up about something I had said, apparently thinking that energy follows consciousness or consciousness follows energy. He got kind of confused. But it's energy follows thought greater than its own. Now, thought is the choices that the individual particles are making, and that maybe beings are making around them. And that's joined with consciousness, and then you get thought. The two have to come together to have thought. Thought is choices with a consistent direction to it that has an effect on the field it's in to limit that field so that the next thing that gets limited will be similar. When you put all that together, that's what a thought is. Okay. You say, well, okay, it's a mouthful. I don't know if I follow that. That's okay. You can read about it another time. But in the meantime, we have some very interesting changes, we can say, in what used to be metaphysics. Because remember, Isaac Newton was a metaphysician long before the guy was a physicist. I mean, I don't even know if he would have called himself a physicist in his younger years. So we have, unfortunately, abolished metaphysics. And let me tell you some of the reasons why it has been put away so badly. The first is that metaphysics has been, for a long time, connected with a thing called esoteric thought. And what esoteric just means hidden. So the thought behind the metaphysics, to some extent, was hidden. And the reason for it was to limit the amount of quote-unquote knowledge that people might have about metaphysics who weren't spiritually advanced in their own principles. And so they had spiritual principles that either tarnished by their own selfishness and illusion, or they didn't have any at all, or had very little of them. And so the danger that represented was that if people got more knowledge without having high enough spiritual principles, then the results would be that they would use the knowledge of metaphysics in ways that were destructive to life and God. And that would be a bad thing. So, on an occult side, there was this need to, occult means hidden again, and so does esoteric. And so there was a desire and a need to try to mystify metaphysics. It's a mouthful, mystifying metaphysics. And mystification really is a way of hiding through oftentimes examples, stories, myths, and sometimes we'll say puzzles and odd structural ways of saying something, so that people would not understand it unless they had some other clues coming from the fact that they were wise and had some spiritual principles that gave them a leg up on trying to figure out what they were hearing that was mystified. Okay. Today, my job, I see it as being here talking to you in ways to demystify ageless wisdom, which includes, under that category, metaphysics. Now, ageless wisdom is all of the metaphysics that exist, along with spiritual principles that exist, along with explanations of God and the meaning of life and many other things. So, obviously, if it's in a show with why life is, would make a lot of sense, right? And so, here, in today's show, I'm trying to join these together and to explain the historical relevance of how metaphysics got so messed up with spiritual principles and science. So if we are going to come to any kind of, we'll say, unwinding and getting ourselves to the point where it's clear what metaphysics really is, we're going to need to probably get rid of some of the bogus things that have been for a long time said, which don't necessarily make any sense, but nonetheless, a lot of people have come to accept them. So, let's begin with the concept. Metaphysics is really just some kind of dark science, pseudoscience that helps people to condemn others and give them powers, and they're seeking to have powers and do terrible things. The work of the devil or evil or something like that. Where did that come from? Anyway, well, that came from the Catholic Church. When they started to rewrite the Bible, they threw out a bunch of books called the Apocrypha. And in those books, there was a lot of metaphysics. Now, why would they throw out the books with the metaphysics in them and keep the books that were stories, kind of an anthology of various events connected to conclusionary concerns and moral stories that help people to supposedly live their lives better. Why would they keep that and throw out the metaphysics? Because they were fighting against a group of people who, at that time, believed that knowledge was more important than God. And so that was their conclusion. I'm not saying the people themselves believe that. They may not have. But the Catholic Church did, at least to some of the people who were big shots in it, during the early 300s AD, believed that, and wanted to do something to make change and to prevent this other side of Christianity from getting any stronger and to weaken. So they threw out about two-thirds, three-fourths of what at that time was considered the Bible. Especially in the New Testament, a lot was thrown out. There were a couple things that were also discarded, chapters and things, from the Old Testament. So but most of it had to do with the New Testament and about Jesus. And they threw out a lot of things, like his upper room experiences and some of the issues where he taught his disciples after his physical death for about 6 weeks. The books of coming from Mary, the idea that there's just a huge number of sources that were actually discarded. And, you know, he was the guy, you might say, that Jesus was the guy who was basically one of the first great beings this planet has had experience with, who was censured. I mean, basically, that's the only way you could describe this, because the amount of stuff that was removed was greater than the amount of stuff that was left. And what was left was unfortunately altered to fit the needs of a power-hungry group of rulers who saw that religion gave them more authority than them trying to convince it at the end of the sword. And it was a lot less money. Troops and weapons and all the things that go along with it are very expensive. Religion was basically cheap. So they liked the idea of religion, but they didn't like the religion as it had been, unfortunately, described by these people, this other group I mentioned. Their name was the Gnostics. They seemed to know so much, and they were very brilliant people, very brilliant men, for the most part, who wrote an incredible amount of material. Most of it connected to these books that were thrown out and had defined so much of what was the beginnings of the Christian faith and still connecting it in large ways to the Judaic scripture and Bible, but not just the Bible, but also to the other important books in Judaic history. So, looking at it from that standpoint, you know, it's kind of fascinating to realize that the beginning of the ending of metaphysics started around 325 A.D. You know, and that's just hard to understand because for a lot of people, most people think that metaphysics is something that never had anything to do with Christianity. And that's certainly not true. But the problem is this, that religions tend to want to gain a certain authority and power over the minds and lives of other people. That's what they are about. Now you could say, well, why do they do that? Because they're supposed to be about God. Well, they are, to some extent, sometimes about God. But they also are created and controlled by people, human beings, who want to feel that their illusion, their religion, it is an illusion though, their religion is exclusive and important, but also that it makes them more important and maybe even earns them a good living. The most important thing to them is that others think and feel the way they do about their religion, in many cases. Not always, but long time. That's true. So that's particularly the case in some of the earlier issues with Christianity. Today, it may be more the case in Islam. But whether it's Islam, Christianity, or whatever, there is this common denominator, which is the controlling factor is not God, in my opinion. It's human beings. It's the narrowness, arrogance, egotism, selfishness of humans, and their need to have other humans think the way they do. So it is a critical element. Now, can that change? Sure, it's going to, right? I would think so. But in terms of spiritual principles, it puts them at odds because of these crude changes to what were fairly enlightened aspects of earlier religions. And it puts them in a conflict with metaphysics. Now, why would spiritual principles be in conflict with metaphysics? It makes no sense because metaphysics is supposed to be explaining God's thought and the principles of God, which is spiritual principles, not trying to obscure it or to deny it or to change it in some crude and hostile and evil, dark way. That would make no sense. Yet some people believe that is what metaphysics does. So the interesting problem here is that for political power, we might say, humans have a tendency to abuse religions by putting spiritual principles in contest with metaphysics and with science. When that happens, it's inevitable that the process will end in some type of violent and seriously destructive ending. Just maybe not an ending, but end in a destructive series of acts. And this has been proven over and over again. If we look at our history books, it's been awful, hasn't it? So how do we adjust for this? Where is the common ground that humans can come together? They can keep their individual religions, but yet still not be in a conflicted issue with anybody who has some metaphysical viewpoint different from their spiritual ones, the other folks' spiritual ones, and have, even worse, a serious conflict with almost every other religion in the world. It's as though every religion says it's the religion that people should be believing, and at the same time they sometimes have a very hostile attitude towards those who aren't part of the religion. This is all, again, coming from the inner side of the human nature at the present time. All right. So then how do we break through this? How do we get spiritual principles and metaphysics to work together? And the answer is the third leg of the situation is to include science. Because science is the seeking of truth. That's really what it means. And it comes from a person not having knowledge, but having conscience. And conscience, that is an ability to be questioning and reducing the level of egotism and increasing the level of humility. Truth comes when we are humble. Humility comes when we challenge people's ideas and thoughts, even when they don't like it. And we do so in ways that shows that we are willing to accept that first we are wrong before anything else. Then you're in a good place to be testing the science of metaphysics along with spiritual principles, and there is a light at the end of that tunnel. A that isn't there if you don't do that. Now, some of the spiritual principles, I told you one of them, energy, power, spark, and so on, but some of the spiritual principles that many people either heard of or may buy into or believe, if I say some of them, have been around for a very long time, longer than most people think even human beings have been on Earth, or we've been here longer, realize, for the most part. And some of these principles are the following. Human beings are a mirror or a reflection in a mirror of their creator. That comes out of the many Bibles, including the Hebrew Bible and the Christian updated version in the New Testament. And so this, you know, you see, you hear this, of course, not, oh, well, you know, God created man in his own image. But image is not just a physical form as much as it is a way of creating, further creating oneself. So we as human beings have the ability to co-create with our Creator, making ourselves into something greater all the time. And this is one of the spiritual principles of God. God chose to create a life, us, human life, different from all the other life on the planet, and other planets too. That's a whole other issue, though. God chose to create life that would choose, or could choose, I should say, on its own, and in its own reasoning and time and feelings, to want to follow God's thought and seeks to do so, and wants to follow in God's works and good ways, and also seeks to do that. So as we progress in that kind of thought, we gain some of the spiritual principles of God, and we can test to see whether living a life like that then produces the outcome of what metaphysics suggests. And what does metaphysics suggest? It suggests that those who live their lives in a more virtuous, godly way, because of all kinds of principles, including karma and many other things that are included in metaphysics, will have a more enriched, meaningful life that is going to have a profound effect for way beyond this life, for what the meaning of existence is to that person. Now, that's only if you believe there's life after death. If you don't believe there's life after death, then you have an issue with what I just said. It's okay. Now, I know from my own experiences that there's very, 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 very high likelihood life is after death, because I've experienced some what that is. And that experience is not in some way just lightly a experience like some of them might have laying on the beach and watching the waves come in. This particular experience took place over a long time, and with a lot of scientific kind of tests, determine the validity of the experience. Because when you're in an out-of-body state, you're prone to picking up information that you may not understand and may not be able to follow in a way that's completely true. You may come to false conclusions. And if you do, that's okay. You can probably solve it later. But the point is, the worlds beyond this one are difficult for us to understand, because the physics have changed. And without understanding the physics of those worlds, you can get kind of lost in it. But if you do understand the physics, then you're bringing science into the equation, and you're testing out these spiritual principles to see if they fit the rules or laws, supposedly, in metaphysics. And when when they all jive together, and I've had that happen, then it's like the light bulb goes off and you say, truth, I think I'm on the truth here. That doesn't happen all the time. Sometimes you try, at least I try, to find out what was the truth about certain spiritual principles and supposedly metaphysics. And it didn't quite work out the way I had expected it. So, yes, I did have a new truth being formulated, but it didn't confirm any understanding I had before, and therefore it was necessary to change some of my preconceived notions about whatever that particular area I was trying to understand were about. This is the best way that I know of to basically get your mind wrapped around spiritual principles and science, and also of making yourself into a metaphysician. A metaphysician is someone who is attempting to find the truth about metaphysics and trying to find what's true and what's not true, where and when it appears to be accurate and helpful and when it is not. These are important parts of being that kind of person. When it comes time for us to eventually leave this realm of physical mind, we will all become metaphysicians of sorts. Why is that? Well, I mean, there's only a few options. You believe you're going to die and nothing is going to be anything more. People believe that. Not the majority, but a lot of people do. It's a kind of fearful way to look at life, and it doesn't give much back. Not very beneficial to have that belief, but some people do. If you believe that, good people are going to go to heaven, bad people are going to go to hell, and some people are going to purgatory, sort of more of a Catholic position. The process there is a little bit too stark for my understanding and my experience. And it deals with so little about God and so much about us. I prefer metaphysics because it deals so much about God and so little about trying to figure out and focus only on humans. I like to focus on life and then focus on God being the bringer of life and we being the bringer of co-creation with God. So we create more of God as we create more of ourselves in ways that are like God. It's a much better system, one that has, for me, a greater potential for deriving great meaning from my life, and one that has within itself a great many answers to things that seem unanswerable and have not been well challenged in the past. Anyway, I want you to all think about what I've just said. We're going to take a break for right now, and when we come back, I will continue with the concept of spiritual principles and the science of metaphysics, and I'll talk about how this can be applied in a more will side, practical side, to our daily lives. And maybe go back even talk about some of the people in history that were metaphysicians and how they lived their lives. Okay, we'll be back in about 2.5 minutes from right now.
Hun, what book are you reading?
It's a novel, kind of, about romance, love, and spiritual life in general.
Kind of a novel? What do you mean?
Well, it's based on some real-life experiences and even real characters. Some of their experiences are fascinating and remarkable. I can't put this book down.
How come the title is Afterlife Love?
That's part of the fascination. This book describes the afterlife in intricate detail and even explains why things are the way they're explained.
But how can anyone write about or know that?
Some of the characters travel out of body to some places that people who've already died also go to. I'm finding it completely believable because it all makes sense and fits into a bigger picture for me.
Hun, what happens to these people?
You can read it for yourself when I'm done if you want.
Better yet, I'll get my own copy so we can discuss it while we read. Let me see. I'll write down the title. It's Afterlife Love by Niles McFlower. MacFlower.
Afterlife Love is available in some bookstores and from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com
or 480-966-3132. That's 480-966-3132.
Hi, everyone. Since childhood, I've had questions about my life and life in general that I couldn't find adequate answers to. Questions like, why am I here? Why are others here? Does the universe have a purpose? And how does that relate to my life? More recently, I've been wondering what happens when we die, especially the reasons why. I'm more of a doubter than a believer in many things, and answers that include the whys allow me to think and figure out the truth for myself. I've been reading a book, Life's Hidden Meaning. This one book contains more answers, including the whys, than all other sources I've read or heard. It's amazing to me that every one of my questions has been thoroughly answered. More importantly, I have found that all of these answers so far have checked out to be true. I hope this message helps some of you in your quest for better understanding. The name of this wonderful book is, again, Life's Hidden Meaning by metaphysician Niles McFlower. Some bookstores sell it. I got my copy directly from the publisher at agelesswisdom.com. Life's Hidden Meaning may enlighten your mind and bring some peace and joy to your heart.
We're back. This is Why Life Is, and I'm your host, Niles McFlower. And tonight we're talking about spiritual principles and the science of metaphysics. So, by the way, I'm going to speak up a little bit more, although I'm trying to conserve my voice. I did a lot of talking today and other days this week, so sometimes my voice gets a little bit hoarse when I do all that. But I'll be in there for you so you can hear me a little better. Okay, so anyway, I also moved the mic a little closer. It's a little trick you can do with radio. Since I tried to define the nature of tonight's show, hopefully by now, if you have heard the first section of the show, you're beginning to gain a little bit of understanding about what I mean by spiritual principles and the science of metaphysics. Generally speaking, it is not well understood, any of these issues that I've talked about. There are so many hidden aspects to these issues, not because they themselves need to be hidden, but because other people have confounded the truth because of their misunderstandings and or their need for power and control and other things. So it has made it very difficult for the average person to even grasp what I'm trying to make so, hopefully, so simple tonight. When someone wants to live their life more spiritual, in a more spiritual way, they need to come to a reality, come to a conclusion of what principles they think they should be living their life by. Spiritual just means God's thought. Okay, but is God going to come to you and say, well, here's what I want you to do, you see? Now, I know there's some stories and some biblical passages, and, you know, there's people who claim that God's come to them and told them to do this or that. But for most of us, I would say almost all of us, that doesn't happen. Really, it doesn't happen. As a matter of fact, if you believe that there are masters who are members of the next or even higher kingdoms of life, the universe, that have one time been human beings and now they have ascended to another state of consciousness, another beingness, which is what I see great beings like Jesus being in that category. Son of God, that's maybe a little bit different understanding than what was originally meant by it. But regardless, a being of great stature by any dimension. Those beings don't come to human beings and tell them what God's thought is under any normal circumstances. So if they don't do it, you can bet your bottom dollar that God's not going to do it in any regular fashion. Why not? Well, because part of this process of life is based upon what I said at the beginning of the show. It has to do with us being free to choose. And if you got the paternal figure of God saying, thou shalt, in your ear all the time, it's pretty hard to say that you're truly making choices. You might say, well, I'm choosing either to hear the thou shalt or I'm not going to hear it. You know, I'm going to turn around and walk away. That's possible, too. But that form of God, the God of the Old Testament, it's kind of a God of being very powerful and being sometimes a God of retribution, but not necessarily the leader God that came out of that beginning God, of God, more of a God of consciousness and love, and eventually a God of true, we'll say, huge beingness that doesn't have to have or doesn't even need or want the worship of human beings or any other being. And that's a little hard to understand because so much of religion is about worshiping God because that's what God wants. But that's not my understanding, and it doesn't work in terms of a metaphysical approach, and it doesn't work in supporting metaphysics with science, and then, strangely, it doesn't work in terms of spiritual principles. Why not spiritual principles? That's what Buckfield said. Well, that's what God is. God is the great lawgiver, gave it to Moses, thou shalt. And here's the point. Maybe the God of Moses did do that. I don't know. But that God did it for a reason at that time that may not any longer apply for us today. If that God did it in the way that Moses heard it, you know, or in the way that God wrote it, because if you believe he wrote it with a finger of fire on a stone tablet, fine. Maybe he did. But the point is, everything could be misinterpreted. Most original stone tablets were destroyed and then recreated. So the ultimate issue here, the ultimate issue, is what is the nature of God when you're trying to understand spiritual principles, because it's the thought of God applied to principles of interaction of human beings with other life and with God itself. And that's where you've got to go past some kind of formulated belief structure. You need something more than that. You've got to start putting your own neck on the line and say, hey, this is about me finding the truth through great wisdom of what God is to me and to others, but to me particularly, is how I'm going to choose to live my life. A lot tougher than going to church and having somebody else tell you. Or trying to read a book where you think the answer may be found. You know, if it's your particular Bible or maybe some other kind of brilliant source. The ultimate circumstance that people find themselves in when they try to deal with spiritual principles is to find things that are so fundamental that no matter what way they walk around it, through it, above it, or below it, they come to a common wisdom, a common reality that is maybe not the same exact thing in words, but it is in terms of living one's life. That's what I like about a thing called ageless wisdom, because that's what that does. Is it always right? No. Nothing that I know of created by human beings is always right. And people who claim that their religion was created by God oftentimes have, when you examine it closely, misstated the truth. So the issue becomes here an important factor. ways that make any, let's say, easy sense to people, but a God who opens its heart so that we can find within ourselves a way of being what it is at times. How do we know that? You can't know it until you sacrifice and serve others. So the answer to these spiritual principles comes down to a life of spiritual service. Those that live their life in spiritual service to others, not for themselves, and not for the religion, and not for their family or friends, but they do it because they see a commonality in life and God within it. That is so important, they live it for that purpose. When you do that, the principles of God's thought become apparent. It's the only time I've ever discovered them myself to be valid and true and wise. And any time I've tried to discover them through reading or thinking or coming to some kind of deductive reasoning, hasn't worked. Doesn't work. So the times of great clarity are the times of great service. And if we don't do that, the spiritual principles just fade into a kind of blob of all the misunderstandings coming from every religion on the planet and every humanist on the planet and all the philosophers and umpteen other sources, from agendas to even government edicts. It all blends together into this mess that confuses the principles under which God lives, thinks, and creates. Then how are we going to be of spiritual service? I mean, you know, there are so many different supposed ways that people can serve. What is the criteria to us of spiritual service? Well, the criteria is that we bring whatever level of wisdom that we seek into the minds and hearts of others first, in us second, third, fourth, tenth, whatever. Now, this is a hard thing for people to do because it's saying that it's more important to serve others than it is to serve one's lower individual self. That's true. But service does not mean that you indiscriminately give to others, because that's not service. Service is the wisdom of God applied. You help others to become better givers of wisdom themselves. You don't help others to have all your money, your time, your energy. You don't help others to do things that are terrible and mean. You don't help others to be destructive to God and light and the universe. That starts making a new kind of precedent, one in which the concepts of freedom of choice are upheld. That we believe and we also act on that belief in ways that is a continuous reaffirmance of God's purpose and the principles of God's thought. Now you can say, well, I haven't done a lot of spiritual service other than maybe I, you know, helped out at the church or did this little thing or that thing once in a while. What does that mean? Well, since the reward in metaphysical terms of living a life where spiritual principles are the foundation of it, then you look at this and you say, well, the meaning of life, the meaning to us individually, not collectively, is improved by considerable amounts the more and more we live our life in service to others, as they might be called to be souls, like their souls, but they may not yet function as a soul here on this realm. But we live our lives to serve so that they can be of greater service themselves to others. As long as we do that, then principles of metaphysics suggest that we should live a more and more meaningful life. I can speak for myself and those I know who are doing this, that that is true. But to convince you of that, I couldn't. So what do I suggest? I suggest that, just like everything else I say on this show, you go out and try it. See if it isn't true. See if the real joy in life doesn't come from helping others to become wise givers themselves, where you can even co-participate with them in some ways, and where they get closer to God, and you get closer to God, while both of you are interacting. See if that isn't really the ticket. And you can test it out yourself whenever you want. Because the world is in such great need, and there's so few who are able to meet it. So this is where metaphysics becomes a practical science. Why? Because in practical terms, most people don't really care about the mysteries of the universe and answering what came first, the chicken or the egg, or putting it another way, where did the universe come from and where did God come from if God exists? And why do we need to have a God if we have a universe that exists? That's where the bottom line comes in, right? Those things are so, in a knowledge sense, confusing and unanswerable, seemingly. Yet at the same time, the meaning of life, which is extremely important, gets swept under the rug by a lot of people. And so, just like in Isaac Newton's life, when we think about metaphysics, metaphysics is the foundation of existence, and spiritual principles are the way that metaphysics connects itself with truth and science, yet an awful lot of people live their lives in meaningless ways by being selfish, lacking any deep understanding about spirit and spiritual principles, and seeking to receive and have and to contain and to control rather than to love and give in wise ways and to develop creation in ourselves and for others with purpose and to interact with others eventually so that we benefit, all of us, from the beingness of each of the others. That's a big deal. All of that put together is what metaphysics suggests is the answer to the quagmire. And why so many people can't find that answer is because they themselves are confused and in illusion about God. They have a structure of mind that presents to them a falseness about God, in which God is an angry, resentful, constantly doing terrible things God, who also is a God who you must believe in or else is going to burn you with brimstone and fire, a God who's going to take your life away unless you are perfect. Really? A God who does not give you the right to be creative, but only the right to follow its thoughts without question. That's a bizarre God. That's the God that I don't want to have much to do with, because to me that's not God, that's evil. That is a very good description that I just went through. So it ultimately comes down to that. that you end up with the opposite of what you're seeking if you buy into some of the concepts that have been spelled out by supposedly religious leaders in the past. Does that mean that religion is bad? No, religion is part of life. Religion is a means and a way of communicating with your Creator, but it is not done by only following one way. You can do it collectively as a group together if you want, but each is having an individual experience. And so it's the individuality of experience that is so important in having spiritual principles, because they constantly change and grow as the lives of humans do. That's the thing that's hard for us to understand. We would say, well, spiritual principles are maybe God, they should be unchangeable, always the same. But God and we and all of the life is growing. Why would a God want to not grow and become some kind of bored lunatic, having nothing to do? God grows through all the life it creates. He grows exponentially in relationship to us because we experience it from a singular point. God experiences all those points all the time. Can we ever get there to that point? Maybe, but then God will be much bigger than we, greater than we are always. Let me talk about a product that we're creating, selling, called Phi Chi Jizik. It's been around for about a year, over a year. And what is it that makes it so great is that it allows the life energy, Chi, to move either in or out of places where it should or should not be. And this allows this energy to be more effective in helping our life forces to move and to become stronger. So we get to live better, live more, by taking things like Phi Chi Jizik, except that you could misuse it, you could abuse it, you can even not use it. If you want to use something that is going to be really helpful in moving the energy, Phi Chi Jizik is probably at the top of the list, especially if you're dealing with pain. There are other reasons to use Phi Chi Jizik, because it can reverse the things that over time will cause pain, but they may not be at the moment. But Jizik is a great, you know, Jizik is a great way of treating pains, because instead of looking at pain as something you want to mask or shut down, instead we use the cause of the pain, which is retained energy or a lack of energy, one of the two. You have too much retained energy or a lack of any energy or very low amounts of it. Both cause pain, somewhat in different ways, but they cause pain. And Jizik is capable, designed, be able to move some of the energy from one place to another that we might fight against, because we are not, our bodies are not foolproof, and we oftentimes make pretty big mistakes. So when you use Jizik, in the beginning there's a lot of inertia. It's difficult to get the energy to move. We have to take a lot. You may take 10 or more pills. And if you got a real bad migraine, you might take 14. But it works. Most of the time, around the 8 to 10 pill level, in the very beginning. And then you can start cutting it down to a point where you don't take very much, but it keeps a nice level, number, of milligrams in your bloodstream of this chronic. And when it does this, it does it in a kind of almost miraculous way, because unlike drugs, which knock you out, make you feel drugged, what they call them, drugs, Jizik does almost none of that. It literally is helping energies inside of you, called demonic energies, to communicate and to communicate among themselves, communicate, want to come more consciously with our conscious self, and then it helps them to communicate with other kinds of energies that only gravitate together and have very little consciousness. So it does hold us. And it does it in a way that follows principles of ancient wisdom, really. Since that's tonight's show, and it follows a lot of metaphysics. Does this stuff work? I would say for most people, yes. For some people, no. Who doesn't it work on? It tends not to work on people who are addicted to anything. Drugs. That includes nicotine, tobacco. That includes whiskey, any kind of alcohol. It also affects people who are addicted to maybe not necessarily things that we normally think as being too bad, but maybe eating a huge number of calories and very saturated foods. That also could harm the ability for Jesus to help you. Now, should you decide to change that, using Jesus may be more helpful in the future. Can you try it, even if you think that you're not living all that well, you smoke a lot of cigarettes or whatever? You can try it. It's not going to hurt you, but it may not work for you. All right, so if Jesus is the answer for dealing with G, at least in terms of pain, then what happens when you do take Jesus? Well, every time you take a dose of Jesus, it makes it easier the next time to work with the demonic energies that are trying to get us to overcome our pains. And it further enhances so many small ways that we might interact with someone who used to be alive 100 years ago. It gives us all of this incredible ability to start looking at life in a much deeper and, we'll say, wider sense, because we can start seeing that the energies within us, the energies within our body, are part of life energy that is within everything, even things that used to be alive and will be alive. It's all interconnected. And so Jesus also, like in tonight's show as I'm talking about it, exposes spiritual principles of truth or science in metaphysics. And that's the biggest reason that I would love people to try Jesus if they have a pain or a problem, or some of the other formulas that I'm familiar with and have sometimes helped to develop, because it exposes so much of God in the formula. It's a spiritual thing, not just because it gets rid of the headache. You got to try it, and hopefully it will work for you. And if one formula doesn't work, that doesn't mean some of the other ones might or won't, but they might not. If you're addicted to anything, it's going to be a problem for you. So addiction is not a problem. And a bunch of drugs you're addicted to, or a drug, it's going to be a problem. If you smoke cigarettes, that's an addiction. So it's going to detract from the ability for these formulas to work for you. The more you aren't addicted to things, the better off you're going to be. You can even be addicted, and a lot of people are, to sugar. That's another problem. Regular sugar, not sugar that doesn't require insulin, only the sugars that do, which is also sucrose. All right. So if you want to get Jesus, you can go to www.buyjesus.com. There. If you want to call, you can call 602-431-5762, and you can get Jesus that way. It's on sale, and it could be for the rest of this year. I would like it to be anyway. For $30 a bottle for the big bottles, and for the travel trial size, it's $12 a bottle. And it gives you, it's just nice to have it around in case something happens and you need it. It's some kind of painful issue. Okay, back to tonight's show. Well, I kind of tied that in with the show. I thought that was kind of cute. All right. Spiritual principles in the science of metaphysics. Where is this going to make a difference in people's lives? Well, if you have a strong understanding of metaphysics, you can get that. One way is to read a textbook I wrote called Life's Hidden Meaning. If you read it and you understand at least half of it, you can use a lot of principles in metaphysics, spiritual principles in metaphysics, and you'll be amazed at what you can do. Your whole life will change because you'll become like a great creator, a great thinker, a great producer of things, too. That's part of it. You can do that. It's not built for your sake you're doing it, because if it is, then probably you didn't get what I wrote. You need to do it, again, because you're focused on others and because you really want to make a difference for others in this world. Oh, sure, you'd love to live in a better world yourself. That's not you. You don't have to, you know, you don't have to give that up. But you do need to be sincerely seeking to be serving others. And when you do, then the magic of the system works. Wow. It really does. Now, it doesn't matter if you have a specific series of beliefs and understandings about God that may be contradictory, even antithetical to metaphysics, because maybe the religion teaches that metaphysics is the work of the devil. Well, then at that point, you need to challenge all the beliefs and thoughts of God with all these other ideas that may be presented, and challenge the ideas themselves with your prior knowledge and thoughts and feelings, and then come to some conclusion yourself. And again, I don't believe God's going to knock on your door and say, "Hi, I'm God, and I thought you should know that these are the principles that I'm believing in at this time." And if God does do that, would you give me a call? Now, that might mean a number of things. You might have some issues in your life, but maybe not. Anybody that's directly talking with God, that's a pretty cool thing, but it's also, I would say, extremely rare. What else do we need to do if we're going to benefit from metaphysics? Well, open-mindedness and humility go hand in hand. If you're humble, you assume that you're wrong before you're right about something. That allows you to challenge your own ideas. Right. You need to challenge your own ideas. And if you're doing this in a method that is critical of what you think you know and understand, then you will reach a point where you have a detached attitude towards all knowledge that you carry inside yourself. That's a great place to become. In the detachment, and this again has to do with metaphysics, detachment from your thoughts means that even your thoughts do not control who or what you are becoming. It's something greater than your thoughts. You can say, "Well, I thought you thought, you said that thoughts are great things and energy follows thought greater things." But yeah, it does. But there's something greater than even a human being's thought. And what is that greater thing? It's the ability to believe and join that with some levels of understanding that we are a part of our Creator. We are truly part of God. And that once we believe that, we can search for the ways in which that holds to be true. Because in every way, each person is uniquely, at an individual level, this is my opinion, a part of God. And it's because of that reason that it's so important to break through your illusion and to not even have to follow in thought processes principles of ageless wisdom, principles of spiritual principles of existence. Instead, you can find it by being completely convinced that God is your co-creator. It was involved in the creation of all life in the universe. And now that life carries on its principles, somewhat independently of God and somewhat interactively with God at the same time. So metaphysics has some great, great lessons for us to learn. And I'm just touching on them because I can't go into them in depth because any one of these would take more than a two-hour show to just even talk about. That's why I suggest reading a book like Life's Meaning. It goes into so many elements of this. But for a two-hour radio show, I can do only so much. I'll keep trying more. We know that. But there's still going to be some limitations on where I can bring this together. So it is helpful. All right, so a person is a metaphysician when they have reached the point that their connection with God is so strong that they don't need to have knowledge, direct knowledge or any kind of knowledge of God. They need to have the experience of co-creating with God and what that brings out to their understanding of God. And I can't explain that because it's different in every single case for each individual and from every other individual's perspective in relationship to that individual. It's unique. And that's why it's so nebulous to say much more about it, because I could only talk endlessly of examples of it. But I cannot say, as a general rule, we do these 10 things, and this shall accomplish this desired goal. Wow. All right. So where does that leave us then? Where in a practical sense can we take this great working body of metaphysics? Well, each day in your life, look for a means or a way of becoming more creative, and look for the way that puts you closer to your creator. Find those ways, and you'll find the ways of being more creative at the same time, while you're applying elements of metaphysics in the process. You start seeing your own consciousness expanding when you do that. You start being able to put together connections that you couldn't put together before, and you had pat answers that maybe came from a Bible or from some study group or from some other place. But those things were only standing in your way of being a true metaphysician, of being a true scientist, and being truly spiritual. Those things were the crutches that most people try to rely upon because it's a little frightening to be totally independent of groups of other people who think in only one way. All right, does that mean that you eliminate all the wonderful people in your life and who think similar to you? No. You just treat them in a way that helps them to grow the most they can in their relationship with God and in their own creation of virtue in the world around them through the interaction with other people and other life forms. This is the thing that you attempt to do. You do it through example. You do it through interaction. You may even do it through some kind of contrivance. It doesn't have to be in any specific way. When we do these things, we grow immensely. We develop a thing called intuitive thought. Now, what's that? Well, most people think about thought in mental terms, but there are really a lot of different ways to think. Let me give you some examples that can clarify this. Those who think very, very connected to the physical world think in terms, literally, of organization and synthesis with no other forms of, we'll say, higher thinking. It's a relatively narrow way to think, and it's the way most people who have relatively low consciousness choose to think. Sometimes they're kind of boorish people who are rough. Sometimes they are academics who think they are so incredibly brilliant. Both suffer through the enormous problems they create for themselves in trying to follow this this arrogant posture that they put on. Metaphysics is really the place where you are practicing physics on yourself. You, as a physicist, use your bodies and senses and their connections with others and with God to try to discover the truth about life and God, and to try to further, after some of that truth is revealed, to go on and co-create with God in many great ways, many wonderful ways. That brings great joy and bliss into your life and that of others. This sounds so maybe simple that a lot of people are probably listening to me and saying, oh, it's so hard about doing that. Heck, I got it all down here. I've been writing it down. I just follow what this guy says. Well, that's all well and good. And you can go ahead and try that. And I wish the best for you. Why is it such a problem? Because most people are illusioned about the word metaphysics, are perplexed and confounded by the word spiritual and principles, and have little understanding of the word science. And they have almost no ability to develop any intuition. Why? Because intuition is not knowledge. As a matter of fact, it's kind of the antithesis of knowledge. Intuition gives you all the knowledge you need instantly. Not that you can create and research and find out or whatever. All you need instantly to do whatever your spiritual service is in an effortless way as well. No effort. Instantly done. Gives you all the knowledge you need without you having to go to any reference sources or hold it into your head, cataloged in some kind of strange way, waiting for an opportunity to spill it out. It's beyond that. It's the ability to apply a part of God's mind in ways that brings us to a new level where mental thinking is not the highest level in order. It changes a human being some of the time into a superhuman being. And it allows those beings to do things that are usually considered impossible. It allows these beings to create things that would seemingly take forever, if not years or decades, to create, and that it could be done in seconds with the use of intuitional or Buddhic thought. The reason it's called Buddhic is because that's where the mind of Buddha eventually reached, and when it did, he attained a new level of thinking, which was the first of two levels of enlightenment that he sought. He didn't seek the enlightenment eventually to be enlightened. In the beginning, and then he let go of that idea, and then decided that the reason he wanted enlightenment is so that he could bring it to others. Because having it himself without being the conduit to help others seemed as negative an experience as not having it at all in the first place. And he said so. So, if you want to live your life in that way, as a great Buddha, or maybe even as Isaac Newton did later in his life, or maybe as so many great people who have had become great metaphysicians have, you may not know their names. You need to develop humility. You need to develop co-creation. You need to open yourself to a dimension of time and space where the beings who exist there are not human. Now, they're not evil dudes and they're not demons or anything like that. These are the more advanced beings who at one point were human. What I'm suggesting, strongly, is that human beings can advance themselves. As a matter of fact, the only way they advance is to do it themselves. But in the wise ways that I'm suggesting in tonight's show, not because they want to win a merit badge or have a certain title, that doesn't matter. They do it because being one with their Creator and helping others to do the same brings more joy, more bliss, more overall wonder into each person's life who does it. Wow. So that's where I believe we have the most potential to grow by developing this form of thought that takes us beyond the normal means of knowledge. Normal means of knowledge is you have as much knowledge as you have gained for selfish reasons in the use of it in your life. That's sort of like taking the apple from the tree of knowledge. But that's based on selfishness. It has a destructive value. The person doing it usually loses humility. Truly, they do. And becomes inordinately mentally selfish, otherwise known as arrogant, with some levels of egotism as well. And this is where we can change the paradigm and change our overall experiences into this new model that I'm hoping to make more public now. Okay, so what happens if you attain a small level of intuition? Well, there's two kinds. The first kind is uncontrolled. You spiritually discipline yourself and you create enough light, life of service, that once in a while, you literally can come up with any knowledge you need to create a virtuous and more, we'll say, spiritually principled method of living your life along with others that you're assisting in doing so as well. That's the beginning. This uncontrolled intuition is the beginning. But it only happens infrequently, and you can't control it well enough to make a mark on the universe in any way. And you're lucky if you even have it happen twice in a row, like within 6 months or a year time, and it's not really good. So what do you do? How do you solve that problem? Well, you have to have controlled intuition. Now, controlled intuition means that at a moment's notice, you can put your mind into the intuitional or Buddhic dimension in time and space. Even though your soul is located in the monastic world, one whole dimension in time and space below it, you're now paying your attention to your Buddhic body. And when you do that, you can't maintain that position unless you are selfless in doing it. So you don't have to worry about being focused on yourself while you're doing it, because as soon as you focus on yourself, it stops happening. If you continue to serve and you're not focusing on yourself, then it becomes controlled, and at the same time, even though it's controlled, you experience no effort in attempting to think using tremendous knowledge, tremendous amounts of knowledge, but simultaneously your consciousness is expanding to use knowledge in unique and more great ways than you ever have before. all these are not too bad, not too shabby outcomes. And when a person becomes able to co-create Buddhic thought, they are on their way. If they stay in that position for a while, they're on their way to moving from the human kingdom to the superhuman. So the surest way to move from the human kingdom to the superhuman kingdom, at least in the same lifetime, is to be co-creating with their creator as much as possible and allowing, you know, things to not be perfect, because you can't be perfect. But you can improve who and what you are. And you can help so many others do the same. It's a wonderful thing. Okay, controlled intuition is the lower of the two realms of enlightenment that you may have heard about. What's the next realm of enlightenment? Well, these are the realms that are talked about in Buddhist thought, but they can be talked about in many others. What's the next realm? The next realm is a realm of judicious and awe-inspiring and tremendous power. Literally, the power of omnipotence. What is omnipotence? It means all-powerful. You do anything you want. Anything you choose. There's a caveat, of course. You can do anything you choose, provided that you're following spiritual principles and using the science of metaphysics. Otherwise, you can't reach Atmic consciousness, which is what it's called, or some people call it nirvana. You cannot reach that state of being, that state of mind, but you follow spiritual principles and the science of medicine and know how to use them. Then you become a great, great creator. I'm not talking about a creator of things, or this or that way of doing something. I'm talking about a creator of souls. You become a true helper. You also become a member of the next kingdom. A helper of people who are functioning all the time as souls. As a matter of fact, the kingdom you move into, you move from the human kingdom to the kingdom of souls. Well, that makes sense. Yeah, you go to the kingdom of soul. That's the next kingdom. That's where, quote-unquote, a lot of the new masters are found. Kingdom of soul. What does it mean, then? What are these beings doing? They're thinking in this nirvanic thought. They're reaching a point of the second level of higher enlightenment. They no longer are human beings. What is it that they participate in that is so remarkable? Well, one of the things that they do is they become part of the purpose of God on a specific planet, in this case, Earth. And they also understand, I should say know and understand, as well as co-create in the purpose that others before them have already created from the same type of consciousness. Wow. This purpose is one with God, because it follows God's spiritual principles 100%. However, it expands upon God's principles, expands upon God's mind, expands upon all life, and helps life to become more abundant, more virtuous, more enlightened, more a part of its great creator. It also allows some of the more advanced of these beings to actually create new life, or co-create. changes in prior life, dramatic changes. So it is a position of omnipotence, but strangely, most of what it functions within is life itself, rather than some kind of mechanistic, oh, I have all the power. I've got the power, man. I've got the power. I have nirvanic power. I'm an atmic being with nirvanic power. No, that's not what it says. It doesn't sing that weird song. It is basically a state of beingness in which the beingness is a new expression every second that it exists. There are no atmic beings who create an atmic thought, who use any thought that was created before them by some other being. They can say, well, wait a second, are you trying to say that, you know, people who have this great kind of consciousness, they are soul and separate unto themselves until, like, you know, not connected to anybody else who's doing all this other stuff. And what about that? I thought that we are here to work together and to share and to, you know, if we create, we create with the mind trying to be helpful to others and also ourselves being creative. How does that fit with all the other things that are going on? And the answer is a little bit hard to understand. It has to do somewhat with what I talked about a few weeks ago, where it's about group consciousness and individual. In one sense, you're living your life for the group of all. We have atmic consciousness, and beyond that, monadic consciousness. You're doing that, but at the same time, you're living as an individual because regardless if the ladder is taken away or this is destroyed or whatever is going on in your world, we all have a need to grow as a single being. Even though we can collectively communicate in atomic energies, communication is amazing between beings because of the interactive state of intelligent activity almost everywhere that they move about. They have so much of it that the idea of living in a hellish life blocked from it is nuts. But at the same time, they want to work together because they realize working together has true gifts about. It brings them so much closer to God by working closely with other advanced souls. Yet, they also have a need at the same time to co-create on an individual level, coming up with new kinds of omnipotence, if you want to call it that, of using energy to help life to grow, and in ways that doesn't hurt life, but improves it. This is the benefit of someone who has learned metaphysics. And those who don't learn metaphysics cannot move on to the kingdom of souls. Well, that sounds strange, because you've heard of great mystics and others who, it seems to us, have not learned metaphysics. But you see, those folks, while they may seem, because of their stature and the way they carry themselves and things that they say, like they are so far advanced, their soul is not necessarily liberated from the mental world. They are not necessarily masters of the ancient wisdom, or great metaphysicians, obviously. They are those that seek a sort of nirvanic presence, but more as a facade than a truth. Anyone who has atmic consciousness or nirvanic beingness doesn't need do not need to do that. As a matter of fact, to do that would be so destructive to their consciousness that they could no longer maintain any consciousness in the atomic realm, the third major world of reality. And they could never leapfrog beyond being human. Very strange in its concept. All right. How do you know I'm telling you the truth? How do you know that all this isn't the greatest, most confusing sense of malarkey you've ever heard, and this is all, you know, some delusional guy who speaks into the radio and sounds like he knows something and wrote a whole hard book that maybe nobody can understand because it isn't understandable? That's how do you know that you can buy any of this stuff? I mean, after all, I admit that I spent time in a sensory isolation time back in the 70s. Maybe all nuts over something. So what is there about what I've said that on an independent basis can convince someone of the truth of who and what they really are? Well, you could try to have out-of-body experiences. Maybe they would become some proof to you. It would prove that you could live in another dimension of time and space, and that such dimensions exist. I don't know if it gets you closer to God. I've said many times I think that that's a false way. I did it myself. I'm not saying that most of who I am today came out of it. It didn't. But so I don't. You could do that, but I don't suggest it. But if that's what you think you need to do, then do it. I think what it really does is it gets people somewhat over a fear of death. That's probably its major value. But in many other ways, it's lacking. So what else can you try to do? Well, we go back to what I said an hour ago. You can try and go and serve in some way or fashion, pushing yourself to do so, even if you find it distasteful, whatever it is that you choose to do. You may not like it after you try it. This gives you the option. This is the ticket to experience the God within us and without us, within and without. And to do so in a way that we can challenge with truth. Now, the challenge with truth is that we are willing to stay conscious and aware and conscious enough so that as we are serving, we can notice from a detached perspective our relationship to those we serve, our relationship with those that don't know us, and our relationship with God. By having all of three of those together, we can find the truth in our relationship to each, and we can gain wisdom in the application of metaphysical principles that are spiritual. In every walk, in every way, in every day of our life. Now, as you know, I've repeatedly said you don't really die in consciousness. Your physical body will go away. But people go on to live in consciousness. Some people don't believe that. It's okay. You're going to find that out anyway, because the truth is, it is what it is, right? And at that final moment when death takes the body that you are presently unconscious of, and your consciousness shifts to another body, first to the etheric part of the physical body, and then that quickly lets go of and goes finally on to the astral. When you get to the astral, you say, hey, I'm still alive. I'm still capable. I don't have a physical body, but I got one of these astral bodies, and they're pretty cool because I can do a lot more with them. I have many more abilities. And I feel like I want to love or give more wisely than I ever have before. That's the grace of God in making a dimension of time and space that we live in from the physical, different from the physical. That is easier and more virtuous another go at it, so to speak, in terms of life. It may not be heaven, although some people think it would be. And it is similar to the sum of the descriptions in some religions. But not every religion believes that this is the end of physical life and go on to another dimension. I'm certain of it, but that's a whole other story. Could I be delusional? Maybe. So far, you know, I spent a lot of time in other subdimensions of time and space. And I consider that really important because it has led me to gain some perspective on what life is about. Life is not about the first 8 years and you got dead. Life is about umpteen endless years. And what you really want to do is not drop dead, but you want to become one with your Creator while you're being connected to and co-surfing with other souls. You want to be a living soul while you live physically. And then you want to take that and bump it up a few notches. Because you can become great so many different ways in a very short time. It's amazing. All right, so I've got a few minutes left here. Let me say this. If tonight's show hasn't given you some better understanding of the subject, then maybe I'm way off the mark. I don't know. If it has, if you have a better understanding, you're starting to say, I think I get what this guy's trying to say, then I encourage you to test it. Don't believe it. Don't believe me. Test it yourself. Start testing a lot of the things you hear about on this program and elsewhere. Get a copy of Life's Hidden Meaning, because if you're really into metaphysics, you need to read that book. It's probably the best book on metaphysics that has yet been written. Why? Because it's not mystical. It's very scientific. Science is all through it, because it challenges so many truths that people have. Some of them may be prejudices that you're unaware of. Things like, well, it's abortion, okay. A lot of people who are spiritual say it's terrible to abort life. Life is a wonderful thing. Are they talking about life or are they talking about human beings? They're talking about human beings. You can't abort a human being until after the first trimester, and then a month or so after that, at least a couple of weeks. That's a fact. Now, why do I say that's a fact? Because the metaphysics explain it. That's in Life's Hidden Meaning. Now, you can choose to believe something entirely different. That's okay. I don't mind it, really. It may not be metaphysically sound. It may not fit into how and why human being grows and was developed. And a zygote is not a human being. For that matter, an 8-week-old fetus is not a human being. Does it have the potential to become a human being? Well, you can talk about the atoms in it having the potential to become a human being. So should we not have any atoms we ingest or breathe or whatever? I mean, come on. You've got to look at what is a and what is not a human being. And that's where controversial this is. But here's a place where truth is not known. But you can find it through metaphysics and spiritual principles. Why is it so important that a human being be a certain number of weeks old? Because it has to have a certain number of chakras developed. It has to have enough of certain bodies developed, especially the astral along with the mental. And the human being, in order to be a human being, and this is so true, it has to have the two spiritual chakras, at least in the most minimal sense, functioning. Otherwise, it's not human. It's no more human than a fly is. Or some other kind of animal. You see, human beings are not animals, but when we're first conceived, we're also not yet human, because all the things that make us human have to be created within us from a source greater than us. And that source is our soul, and the thing that's greater than the soul called beings that are spiritual that lie outside of the human kingdom. That's the real giver of life. Without these beings being around, the life as we understand it could exist. Without souls existing, life could not exist. Souls change. They move from becoming very imprisoned to becoming liberated. Liberated souls are the masters, the great ones, who are great metaphysicians and scientists, and who always live their life by spiritual principles as being the first aspect of their existence. I hope the show has made some sense tonight. You know, it's kind of interesting. I take a subject and I learn about it as I teach it. You may not know that. And what I'm teaching you tonight was formulated in about 15 seconds. And you may not believe that either. There are witnesses to that, but it doesn't matter. How would you do that? Well, that's part of my service. My service is doing what I'm doing for you right now. So I am an example as I speak to you. Not to stroke me, not to say I'm great, not to say anything about me, but to say something as an example to you of how, if you practice the things that I teach, then you can do these things and more. And they are things that do not require effort, only the willingness to be the vessel of service for God's thought coming through you in a way that allows you to co-create. I'm not a puppet here. I'm involved in the process. You can do the same thing. All of you listening to me tonight have the same opportunities. The same thing, not being a carbon copy, not being a copy at all. Because on an individual level, remember, individuality is part of it. It's unique. But it also is being done, not in a vacuum. It's being done for the purpose and the will of all those that are also serving in a multitude of other ways, individually, but then as a group as well, to bring enlightenment to the world, to bring a world of great, wonderful life, different than it is today, with a future that has an endless promise. Well, until next week, this has been Niles McClellan for Why Life Is.